I'm going to do a little bit more housekeeping for Sandy, and I am to let you know that after our next session, we will have a drawing for an iPad. So it'd be nice if you can kind of stay with us. As well, after that, we'll have a nice little cocktail. I'll be fine. A little cocktail event. You can come and visit us over at our Agrium booth after today's sessions. We'd love to buy you a drink and come and see a little bit more of the exhibitors. It's my pleasure to be able to introduce John Murphy from Leafa Tech to you. We've had John with us on a number of other occasions, and he never fails to give a really great, energetic presentation. Has a very unique way of presenting talks on rodent control, and I know I always get to learn a little something every time. John is the Northeast District Sales Manager for Leafa Tech. And he comes with 30 years of experience in the pest management industry. Please join me in welcoming John Murphy from Leafa Tech.
Wow. Thank you very much, Sharon, for that introduction, and thank you for the invitation to partake in this event. It's great to see everybody, and good afternoon. And I believe I am your last speaker before the cocktail hour. So if you want, I'll start taking your drink orders now, and we can begin the process. But I am asked to come up here this afternoon and discuss rodent control, and I hope I can be energetic now that my introduction says I will be. But rodent control, for me, I have a passion for that. And I work for Leafa Tech. I work in the Northeast of the United States for Leafa Tech. And for me in the Northeast, that encompasses a lot of states with a huge urban population, which, if you can think about it, gives me a lot of rats and mites to play with every day. I work in the states from Virginia, West Virginia, up through to Maine, and then I go over and I just kiss the state of Ohio for a bit. So if you can picture Washington, D.C., Baltimore, New York City, Boston, I could probably stay there and forget the rest of the territory. So how I came up with a passion for killing rats and mice, I don't know. I truly do enjoy killing them, and I come from a school of thought that that rat is a commensal critter. That's a rodent. And that critter is going to cause a tremendous amount of damage and spread disease. So therefore, he's dead. I want him out of the picture. I do not come from the school of thought that will say, let's put him in a box, let's take him outside to the woods, and let him go and live another day. These are commensal rodents. They're on labels of rodenticides for a reason. I work for a company that sells rodenticides. In essence, I'm a poison peddler. So I like to distribute anticoagulants, and I like to find out new ways to get them to eat it and to get them to go off and die in 3 to 5 days according to label. So today, in this hour, I'm just going to touch on a little bit of everything, some new stuff, some techniques, some behavior, some biology, and in essence, what is the core of rodent control? Because we're doing that every single day if we're out there and if that's a part of our business. Whether it's managing the business, owning the business, or just out there doing a route, we have to be as efficient as possible and we have to understand what we're dealing with. And of course, in business, we need the bottom line. We could probably do a whole session one day on how to run the business, how to manage the routes, how to find a good employee, and then in essence, make a profit. That's separate. But hopefully in this little bit of an hour here, this is how I envision rodent control. This is how I've done rodent control. My background is 32 years now. I'm proud of that I've been in this industry. I owned a pest control company, I worked in distribution, and I've been involved in manufacturing. So I have a fun time in this industry, and I enjoy it. I enjoy meeting everybody. So let's move forward a little bit. And did anybody check the kitchen where lunch came from? Sanitation is key in rodent control. Sanitation is key in pest control. If everybody sanitized or cleaned up that they should, well, our jobs would be much easier. Thank God for Photoshop, because even you could throw in a whole bunch of little critters here and make the picture exciting. We should actually do, you know, find the, where are they located. Everybody pick out a picture and find where, which critters in what position. And you find any new species of animals around. Keep an eye when you look at a critter on a glue board or a snap trap. When was the last time you seriously identified it? Is it a male rat? Is it a female rat? Female mouse? Male mouse? Or is it one of these guys? I had a group of people that said, John, please come in and give us about an hour and a half on rodent control and give us at least a half hour on bird control. Okay, so thank God with Photoshop, we can create new species of critters and figure out how to control them and manage them. But we all know in this industry, if you did sit before a group of folks, that's a new species, we've got a new device for it, we've got a new rodenticide for it, you never know what'll happen. I'm not supposed to show this. I've been asked to stop. But this took effect or took place in New York City. I'm not in New York City today, so just don't make any phone calls or let the folks know what I'm doing. But back around 2009, this is a huge historical bakery. They're 100 years in one building in Brooklyn, New York, and they make cheesecakes. And everybody loves their cheesecakes. And they do this every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But now with new technology, people walk by the storefront with their little cameras and their cell phones, and in the display cases, they see little mice eating the cheesecakes in broad daylight. So when you bought that cheesecake with the chocolate sprinkles, that was not chocolate sprinkles. Health department went in, and they worked their magic. They shut them down. They shut them down weeks before the Thanksgiving holiday, which then in turn went into Christmas and New Year's. This company had a pest control company come in, and they serviced that account once a month for the least amount of money possible. So that company did not do the best service. The building was 100 years old. Nobody ever remodeled the structure. Sanitation was horrible. But once the health department came in and shut them down, well, guess what? Let's clean up our act. And they brought in a young, aggressive pest control company. And that group worked 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They sat with the contractor and they said, I need all these holes sealed up. We're going to put rodenticide here. We're going to trap. We're going to come in at night. We're going to tell you how to sanitize the floors. We'll pick up all the droppings. They did everything. Store passed the inspection. The store reopened. That new company lasted about 8 months because then they went back to their old ways and said, you know what? We don't want to pay that much. We don't need you anymore. Now, at this point, years later, they're starting to get back to the same way they were. So in what we do, we go in and we master our art of pest control, and we solve problems, and we have to be as competitive pricing as possible and do the best job we can. But sometimes that customer just steps back and says, that's it, love you, baby, you're gone. You did a great job, but I just can't afford that service. And that's a frustration sometimes that I've always felt in this business, and I'm sure other people do, and every other type of service industry does, because you'll bend over backwards. Your technicians will bend over backwards. But then the customer looks at the bottom line and says, I could do something else. I'd rather pay somebody to just mop the floor twice as much and let the mice run around for a while. So once the health department gets back in there, maybe within the next couple of years, well, things will change again. Has anybody done rodent work? Yes, no, maybe. We've all done rodent work. That's a house mouse. When you put out a glue board or a snap trap, is the house mouse smart or dumb? Dumb? Curious? The textbook says that the house mouse, the musculus, is dumb. That the brain, he's too small. He's stupid. He's a little guy. He just runs around. Well, if you've all tried to trap him and catch him, and you scratch your head and say, I know he jumped over that glue board just to spite me, and I know he moved away from the snap trap because I put two of them out, and he knows I put two of them out. He is smart. He is curious. He is finicky. But understand that on this planet, we are the number one mammal with the ability to survive. We are number one. We can find food, shelter, and reproduce. And who's second to us with the ability to survive? The common house mouse. Out of all the other mammals on this planet, all this guy does for 24 hours a day, or his waking energy, is to survive. That's all he thinks about. That everything he does is to survive. He's not jumping over the snap trap because he knows you put it out there and he's going to mess up your day. He's going to eventually jump over it because he might even realize that that snap trap just crushed Cousin Vinny's head. And he's going to go away from that and move to another one. He's the number one. He's second to us. And third to us is the Norway rat, another commensal rodent that in structural pest control, that's one of our targets. That's what we go after. There's over 2,000 different genus species of rodents on the planet. And out of 2,000, three of them are commensal. And all commensal means is that they live amongst us, they live with us. And the three are the roof rat, the Norway rat, and the house mouse. And in structural, especially urban pest management, that's our target, and that's what we go after. That critter will do whatever he can every day to make it to the next day. And we can sit there and you can write up a program on exclusion. Well, there's the outside of the building. All those rats are running right around that dumpster. They're getting into that building tonight. So we're going to seal up the hole. That's great. Seal up the hole. But when you do seal up that hole, understand that that rat is not going to give up. And if he can chew his way through whatever material you just used, he's going to be back in. Because in his brain, he understands that if he doesn't get to that food source tonight, he's going to be dead. He's got to get to it. Whether it's garbage, a donut, an egg roll, you name it, if that's what he's been feeding on for the last couple of months and he doesn't get it, he thinks he's not going to make it. And it's going to take hours or even days for another rodent to come next to him and say, psst, psst, there's another door open around the corner. Let's go get the food that way. They will tear apart anything you put in front of them when they want to eat and take that to the bank because 3/4-inch plywood, concrete, you name it, if they can get a good edge on it, they will constantly grab it, nibble it, chew it, gnaw it, work it, and get through to it. That's my environment. That's where I was raised. That's New York City. That's where I learned pest control. That's where I did that my whole career. I learned a lot in a heavy urban environment. But even today, pick any building, mice are in it. Put any building, rats are in it. And those tenants can call the health department, and they'll say, there's rats running throughout our building. Health department is going to respond. They will respond within a couple of hours, because once again, rodent-borne diseases. Rodents do not stop carrying diseases. They always have. They always will. That's probably one of the number why reasons that we want to control them. I'm not going to give you an hour on diseases because I couldn't and I've done it. But about a week later, I get phone calls because everybody attended. They think they're sick. So I will not do a whole hour on rodent-borne diseases. But the stuff is there. Be aware of it. If you're working with tools that have controlled rodents, be smart. Wear your gloves. Wash your hands. Treat yourself the right way. Even if you're doing an inspection, and if you're in a crawl space, it may not be rodent-borne diseases, but it also could just be some other contaminants, et cetera, that are in those areas that you're crawling around and working in. In order to do rodent work, you basically have to be committed, in my opinion, to lay down on your belly, lay down on your back, and crawl all over the place. And in doing that, you're going to bump into stuff. You're going to scrape your hand. You're going to scrape your knee. You have to definitely watch out for syringes because in my experience, I've had three buddies that have been stuck by syringes when they put their hand up into a drop ceiling or they're going to put an insect monitor in a garbage can disposal. So watch our surroundings and be aware of it because in a way, we have to be proactive for that. Well, we're going to have a rodent program now. We're going to sit down and we have to figure things out. We have this huge account. Big, large, small, whatever, but we have to get a strategy in place. Understand our rodent behavior. Now, for years, in any pest control meeting, well, everybody covers the rat and mouse behavior, and the rat will have so many pups this year and so many litters, and the mouse will do this. That's right. They all do that. They haven't changed. Years ago at Leafatech, we put together a book. It's called The Commensal Rodent Facts. It's free. You're welcome to have as many as you want. It opens up, it's a booklet on the behavior and biology of commensal rodents. Either use it to educate yourselves, but use it to educate your customers. Customers can sit online and Google everything they want to know about commensal rodents. But by understanding the behavior on how that critter works, runs, travels, we can select the proper control tools. Walk next door to the exhibit hall, and you will see all the vendors with all great products. And all these great products are designed to go after specific target pests. If we had one exhibit just on rodent control products, the room would be just as filled. The tools for us in one toolbox just for rodent control stuff is immense. And it all is designed to target rats and mice, and they all work on rats and mice. At Leaf Attack, sure, we've got products. Bell's got products. Atlantic Paste and Glue has products. Kness has products. But they've all been evolving and changing to help pest control professionals manage populations and control populations. Think about the Kness catch-all trap. And folks will say, John, you at Leaf Attack, talk about Leaf Attack products. But think about the Kness catch-all trap. Mr. Kness designed that trap as a janitor in a school watching mice run around. And he designed that box with that wind-up off the behavior of a mouse. And the original directions for that box, which is about the size of a shoebox, it told you to leave a space about a quarter inch between the box and the wall. Because by doing that, as the mouse runs down the wall, the box casts a shadow. And by the mouse seeing his shadow, he gets spooked. He jogs to the left. When he jogs to the left, that's where the hole is in the box. And the little guy jumps in the hole. The wheel pushes him into the compartment. That box hasn't changed in all these years. And it still works. Now, if you use a lot of them, you're going to say, well, John, you know, mice get stuck in there and it gets a little funky. That's fine. But the idea was the box was designed on how the little guy ran around. Until this day, it works. Even all the rodenticides work. Get them to eat it, they're going to die. There's a purpose behind all that stuff. New soft bait technology? Soft bait is highly palatable. It's just a new introduction to see how these critters respond, how they feed on stuff, and then hopefully go off and die and we can manage populations. We know their behavior. We've studied a little bit on it. We don't have to know the whole textbook. But now we're also educating the customer. I want the customer to know that by not cleaning up this account, by not sanitizing the desk or the shelf unit, not only will I spread disease or you will spread disease, Mr. Account Manager, but by not eliminating the pheromones, I will still continue to attract rodents. Understand that if mice run across this counter every night, they're going to urinate. And there's droppings. And from that urine and from that droppings, there are pheromones, which are chemical attractants. Other rodents will follow the same path because the pheromones are here. But if I take some Lysol, some Pine Sol, any type of strong disinfectant, I have just crushed all the pheromones. They're gone. So if I wanted to come into this room tonight and the manager of this building said, bait everything, put all your traps out, kill all the mice. Well, if I know there's a continual runway over here, and it's mouse control, not rat control, I'm going to suggest, before I come in tonight, can you disinfect this area? Because when you do disinfect it today, and I come back tonight, those mice will be twice as curious, because now the pheromones are gone. If I took a mouse now and put him on the table, that mouse would probably go to everybody's table, everybody's pet, everybody's pad, because the mouse is curious. He survives, she survives, but curiosity is at its height. It would go to all the tables, run around, sniff everybody, and just hang out. Take the mouse away and introduce a Norway rat. Oh, don't do that, John, because if you watch the movies, the Norway rat is aggressive. The Norway rat's going to chase us out of here. Opposite. The Norway rat is afraid of anything new, including us. Put that rat on that table and that table in front of us now. He's going to stop. He's going to hiss. He'll take two steps back and he'll be gone. The Norway rat is completely opposite than the mouse. The mouse, as small as he is,
is curious and bold, and he'll run all over the place. The Norway rat, as big as he is, and how much damage he could do, is going to take a back seat, and he's going to walk away. And understand that when you put out the tools to control either one. If I'm controlling mice, I want a ton of stuff. The more tools I put out, the quicker I can get results, because they're so curious. On the opposite side, the rat, the more time, the more effort I put into putting out all these tools, for the first 24, 48 hours, even longer, he may not go near any of it. It might take up to 4 to 5 days for a rat to walk in a bait station. And you could look at all the new great bait stations. Concrete bases, this shape, that shape, mounted vertical, they all work. But sometimes that rat is so neophobic that he's going to stay away from it. And of course, we're allowed to put things in there to attract him and get him in, and that's part of the course. Figure out what else is he going to feed on, what else we could do to attract him. But we have to think of different ways to get him in sometimes. So if you understand the behavior, you're going to pick the proper control materials. We understand how they behave. We're looking at this account. What are we going to use? Snap traps? Oh, that'd be great. Glue boards. We could use glue boards. We could do a little rodenticide. We could do a little bit of everything. By understanding the behavior and biology, we can predict or pick what type of materials we will use to control that account. Control tactics. How are we going to do it? We cannot look at an account unless we do an inspection. If I could do anything, if I had technicians in front of me or anybody in front of me, if we're going to do a serious rodent project, you've got to take a step back, listen to the customer, communicate, understand the needs of that customer. Now sit back and do a thorough inspection. Where are they coming from? Why are they here? We can go on and on with a checklist. But after I come up with that checklist, now I have to be as efficient as possible, as cost efficient as possible, and figure out how am I going to solve this person's problem. By understanding how they behave, I'll choose the right materials. And now, what kind of tactics are we going to work with? You might solve a problem just with a pressure washer. We're going to sanitize everything, we'll seal up holes, and we're done. Or you might have to go to an account every day or every night for 2 weeks in a row to trap, to exclude, to build up, to seal out, and then use rodenticide. You don't know. But by understanding all that and then doing that thorough inspection, well, hopefully we can solve some problems. Rules and regulations. Without a doubt, whether it's in Canada, whether it's me in the States, labels the law. There's lots of rules and regulations. Probably nowadays in pest control, we might spend more time reporting and filing and doing stuff. But we have to be aware of that and how we proceed, how we apply the products, what products we pick. And also understand the products that you're working with. If I take a mini block that's an anticoagulant and I put that in a bait station, and I'll put that in the corner of an office, and I leave. Well, then that office can call and say, well, we're all sick. Why are you sick? Well, the pest control person put poison in the corner of the room. Well, there's a mini block with an anticoagulant. There's no inhalation exposure. There's nothing. If you're sick from that, that means you got up, opened the tamper-resistant box, and you're chewing on it. There's no other exposure from rodenticides. So understand the materials we use, how they affect the surroundings and the environment. It's our job to understand that. Also understand if you do have questions on the products, then you go to your distributors and you go to your manufacturers. The internet is filled with stuff. But if you've got serious questions on the materials that you're applying, go straight to the manufacturer, go to your distributors. Rules and regulations, always important. Your own bad habits. Well, you know what? I've been servicing this hotel for 6 months. I'm the technician, or I'm the service manager responsible for this count. And if I look on the record, we've never been into the basement area, or we've never looked into the drop ceilings. I have to know that. I have to be aware of that. Or even myself, there might be areas that I haven't gotten to yet. And in certain accounts, you don't have to go to them all the time. But if I've got accounts with raised flooring, crawl spaces, basements, drop ceilings, and I've never even checked them or put a monitoring device up in those areas or below those areas, well, then shame on me. because sooner or later, I've got to put something there to check. You've also got to understand, I might have some bad habits, but what about folks working with us? Before I return to LeafAtech, I'm with LeafAtech now about 4 years. If you don't know, I worked for them from 1996 to around 2002, went off, did some other projects. I'm back about 4 years. Before I returned, I was a technical director for a great pest control group in Manhattan. Great bunch of technicians, great owners, and we did 24-hour shifts, all work in commercial buildings and hotels in New York City proper. So one gentleman calls up and says, one of the senior techs, he says, you have to come to such and such hotel today because Andy, the technician, he's got a bed bug treatment to do in one of the rooms. This whole hotel was Andy's responsibility. So you're like, all right, sure, let's go. And we're standing down the hallway. And we watch Andy get off the elevator. And Andy's got his B&G gray service container. He's got a white Tyvek suit. He goes up to the door, pops it open with the key. He puts the Neverest case to the door, props it open. He puts on the suit, puts on the full face respirator, puts the flashlight on, even though it's broad daylight out, leaves that on the floor. And he gets two cans of Whitmire PT565. He doesn't even go in the room yet. He stands at the doorway, and he's doing all this stuff. So you go up to him behind him, and he doesn't know you're there. Tap him on the shoulder, and he gets all nervous. What are you doing? I'm doing a bed bug treatment. Well, that's not how we do bed bug treatments. Well, this is how I do them. But that's not how we do bed bug treatments. I'm afraid of bed bugs. What? I'm afraid of bed bugs. But you got a suit on, you got everything else. I don't want to go in the room. But you've been responsible for this hotel. Now I'm going back a little while in New York City when the bed bugs started to pop up a lot. You're doing a lot of bed bug work in this hotel. Well, I don't go in the rooms. Oh, my goodness. So he was afraid of bed bugs. Well, guess what? You're not going to do bed bug work anymore. But over the years, I've met even owners of companies. Two brothers. They own a great business. But the one brother, there's a rat problem in that restaurant. Well, let's go in. I'll help you out. I don't want to go in. Well, why not? I'm afraid of rats. What about mice? I'm just afraid of mice. Not everybody's meant to do what we do. So understand that. If we're hiring, if we're bringing people into the company, if we're even just going to bring somebody out for the first time, there's a lot of things we have to deal with sometimes. It's not meant for everybody. So understand who we are, what we have to do, and if somebody is a little fearful of something, just speak up, because in our business, there's always something else they could do. Old rodent tales. These are myths, but each time I put a myth up, I've dealt with it. I've interacted with it. So I didn't just drive 8 hours somewhere and think about things to put on a slide, all right? This should be myth busters of rodent work, but think about it. There was an industry professional for years that would stand up at these national meetings and he would say, you're trying to catch that one alpha rat? Put beer out. The rat will drink the beer and he dies. LeafAtech is based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They know rodenticides, cheese, and beer. Rats love beer. If anything, you want to attract a rat, give him some beer. But you're not going to kill him. They cannot regurgitate, but the sequence of belching, trust me, they're a mammal. They can do that. They will not pop because they're eating a carbonated beverage, okay? Rodent job salesman 101. Don't worry about it, Mr. and Mrs. Jones. We're going to treat your home. We'll kill all the rodents, but they're going to die and smell. No, no, they go outside to find water and die. Has anybody ever said that? There's nothing in the tools that we use that cause these guys to get thirsty. They don't. Now, they're mammals like us, so if you've ingested an anticoagulant and you're starting to hemorrhage, you will feel sleepy and lethargic. So you might want to try to go back to your bed and go to sleep. Or you might just drop dead. There's no way we can guarantee where the critters are going to drop. And especially, there's nothing in anything we use that makes them go outside to find water and die. Chewing gum will cause fatal constipation. Owner of a company said, John, and if you don't know, my territory, like I said, it's filled with pest control folks. And what I do is I work with as many people as possible. Because if I can't help you with my products, then why should I try to sell them to you? So primarily all I do all day is work with companies, whether I have to help troubleshoot an account, do training, etc. As much as I could do, I'm there. So the owner says, help my folks, my technicians with this account. I say, fine, I'll walk through the account with them. I'll feel it. Let's see how they what they do, and I'll keep an eye on them. And there's the technicians, and they're putting juicy fruit gum in mouse boxes. I'm like, what are you doing? Well, we're going to put gum in the box. Well, why? Well, when the mouse eats the gum, it clogs them up, and they die. They get all backed up. Where'd you hear that? Oh, I don't know. You've been doing this in the account for how long? Oh, a while. Did you solve the problem? No. Mice and rats will eat anything. They are omnivores. That's just what it means. They'll feed on anything. You can have cooked food, they'll eat it. Give them raw food, they'll eat it. Take them to a landfill, they'll eat that. But what they do is nibble. They nibble on everything. I could put a whole case of juicy fruit gum, and that mouse will nibble, ingest, pass it. Nibble, ingest, and pass it. The rat will come over, he'll nibble on it, he'll ingest it, he'll pass it. I cannot kill rodents by feeding them bubble gum. Vitamin K in dog food is the poison antidote. If you're all using anticoagulants, what is the poison antidote? Vitamin K1. There is a difference. You will find vitamin K, you will find vitamin K2, you will find vitamin K3 in dog food, even in horse food, but you will not find K1. And you could even get that in writing from Purina. Yes, sir. Not K1. No, they can increase vitamin K and even K3, but I am not aware of K1. And I could double check that, that's what makes the vitamin K world a little separate. K1 is the antidote, but even in the dog foods and stuff, there is no K1. So if those little mice or whatever are feeding on dog food, you can still give them a single feed anticoagulant. As long as they eat it, they will go off and die. Okay. Major building in Washington, D.C., and the rats literally have the path right through all the ivy. Rats going this way, and rats are going that way. Same thing. Owner asked me to go down and hang out with the techs. Guys, what are you doing? Got snap traps. Have you used any rodenticides? Oh, no. Because if the rat eats the grass, he will have enough vitamin K1 in the grass to suppress the anticoagulant. Where'd you hear that? I don't know. A rat's going to have to eat about a 100-acre broccoli field to get enough vitamin K1 in him to counter anticoagulants. I went into my vehicle, gave them as much samples as I had, and within the 5 days, they had dead rats, okay? Use the products. They work. It takes a lot for that rodent to show up with some type of antidote to get away from the products that we're using. Also, there is not a rodenticide out there that when they die, they smell like cherries. We haven't come up with that one yet, all right? They dry out. They never smell. Has anybody ever smelled rodents? No. There's the dead odor, and then there's the live odor. And we could talk about inspections, but use your senses and smell them, and you will find them. Just like there's many a restaurant now, I no longer go, because as you walk in, they say, good evening, table for two? No, I can smell something. And then you leave. I said they will chew, they will gnaw, they will always cause damage. Rodent comes from rodenture, and it means to gnaw, to chew. Understand that the rat or the mouse will chew through aluminum, mortar, plastic, and lead. They will not ingest it. They will not live off it. But the little guys will constantly gnaw upon it, and work on it. That little mouse, if he wants to get through that little mortar joint in a cinder block wall, will do it. And he'll keep playing on it and nibbling, filing it out to get himself through it. The rat has a biting pressure of 7,000 pounds per square inch and 6 bites per second. I've never been bitten by a Norway rat. I do not want to be bitten by a Norway rat. If you're working with glue boards, everybody loves to apply glue boards. Sometimes folks are glue board applicators before they are pest management people. But if you've got a rodent on a glue board and he's still alive, please focus on what you're going to do. A technician had a mouse on a glue board, and he wanted to fold it over and put the little guy out of his misery. So as he did that, his cell phone rang. So he decided to pick up the cell phone because it was his wife. As he did that, the mouse, who was still alive and his head was hanging off the glue board, decided to bite him right here. So as the restaurant owner said, "John, your technician fell back into the wall. The mouse was dangling off his hand, still stuck on the glue board, and he's screaming to the wife, and he's trying to pick up your two-way radio to call you." Now, he just got a little shot, a little stitch, whatever, he was fine. But they do not want to be cornered. They do not want to be trapped. They will not run after you and jump on you and bite you, but if it is cornered or stuck on a glue board, focus. Call the wife back, call the husband back next time. But this poor guy had a mouse dangling off his hand, and trust me, that didn't tickle. For years, folks have said that the Norway rat has to constantly chew because those two incisor teeth have to stay short and sharp, and they, if not, they will grow through their head, and it will kill them. It takes about 2 years for those incisor teeth to grow at that length. A Norway rat only lives for about 12 months. A house mouse only lives for about 12 months. All the rodents that you've controlled, all the rodents that you've taken out of buildings, if you left them alone, they're going to die of old age. But then why are they still there? Because as many that are dying in 12 months, they've reproduced like crazy. But those two incisor teeth, they keep them short and sharp because that's their hands in essence. The way you and I pick something up, that's what we use. But for rodents, that's what they work with first. Those two incisor teeth are mainstay for them with anything. They will keep them short, they will keep them sharp, but they will also investigate stuff, not with their paws, but with their incisor teeth. So it's constant, all the time. Talking about diseases, what can I say? The rat will expel 20 to 50 droppings a day, 1/2 ounce of urine per day, 500,000 body hairs per year. If that rat runs across a prep table in a food account, besides the urine and the droppings, the body hairs are shed. They fall off. There's also fleas, ticks, or mites that could be on that little guy as he runs across the prep area. A mouse is 40 to 100 droppings a day. The mouse only eats 1/10 of an ounce of food per day. So out of that little guy who eats a little diet, there's a lot of stuff. And if you're doing an inspection and you move all this stuff, wow, look at all the droppings. We've got a lot of mice. You may not have a lot. Could be a couple. They could be conveniently spotted right here. They're established. They're running around a lot. But that's a lot of droppings. Hundreds of small droplets of urine from mice in 24 hours. Yes, sir? It's 3,000 times per day. I've actually got a chart on the desk in size that'll give you the amount in cc's. That I can't tell you offhand, whether it's like 1/2 ounce, et cetera, but I've got a chart that shows you that. But it's actually 3,000 times in 24 hours that little guy does what he does. They are incontinent. They don't wait and go to the corner of the room and do what they have to do. Wherever they're running, jumping, and flying, that's what they're doing. So whether somebody says, "Well, the mouse is always at my desk in the morning," well, you know what? Clean up your desk and sanitize it, because there is bacteria here that we have to control. and it's also pheromones that will continually attract them. Also understand, as far as tools go, if I can get rodents into a bait station, I'm halfway there. The hardest thing is to put the bait stations out. I did the inspection, but I want them in the boxes. If I can get them in the boxes, I will attract other rodents. When those rodents get into the box, even and if they feed on a rodenticide, they will urinate. The pheromone is in the box. The box is now attractive to other rodents. Folks will say for years, oh, I love peanut butter. I love chocolate. And I'll put all this stuff in the bait stations and I will attract rodents. That's great. But did you ever go to an account like 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning and see fresh rat droppings? Put that into your bait stations. Because what you're doing now is you're taking the scent, the pheromone, and you're putting it in your tool. Fresh mouse droppings, fresh rat droppings, it's a home run. It works. Also understand, you've got a mouse infestation. You're trying to target mice in this account. There's hundreds of mice. It's infested. Can we say perhaps 50% are females? And because we know of their reproduction rate, that out of that 50%, probably they're all pregnant. They're going to be moms. They're not interested in the peanut butter on the snap trap. They're not interested in the little Hershey kiss that you put in the bait station. But what the female mouse would be interested in is nesting material, more so than food. So if I put out all these snap traps and I put all the peanut butter on it and all this nice stuff, you know what? We don't get a lot. What if you started putting nesting material? What if you just put a little piece of dental floss on a snap trap or a cotton ball on a snap trap? Or on a glue board, or in a bait station? Could you attract the females? If I want to crush a population, if I can get the females, I can reduce the numbers much quicker. We've never been taught to take a rodent, trap it, and inspect if it's male or female. We've never done that. I worked with a technician at an account. We walked through the whole account. Technician marked catch-all number 2 mice. Catch-all number 6, ooh, caught another mouse. We did this the whole morning. The technician checked out to the building manager or the facilities manager. Technician was very gracious and polite, went through the report and said, by the way, we caught a total of 6 mice in your building. And the manager said, oh, yeah? How many were female? Technician took a step back and said, I asked Mr. Murphy. I've never been asked that in my life. 3 were female. Well, that's great. Why are you asking us about male or female mice? Well, if you caught 6 mice in my warehouse and none of them were females, that means you guys are leaving all the females back to have more babies. Makes sense. Where'd you read that? On the internet. Okay, it makes sense. We don't do it every day. But if we're going to be thorough and do these great inspections, use all the great tools we have, sometimes sit back and say, you know what? Maybe I will try to target male versus female. Or maybe at least I'm going to put out snap traps, say, with a food attractant, and maybe some snap traps with more of a nesting material attractant. You never know what's going to happen. I've been times where I've taken mouse boxes without food, just put a mouse box out, a couple of them, in these areas where I know I have activity, and just fill it with cotton and wait and see what happens. By the next day, the cotton's gone, some of it's gone, but a lot of it's got urine on it, and it's got droppings in the boxes. Done. I've got my territory established. I've got them in one area. Now, if I want to introduce a rodenticide or any other type of tool in that area, I've got them showing up, and I've got them slowing down and stopping. What I have been finding, since we're talking about poop and stuff and pheromones, but rats especially, they seem to be doing their business out of sight more than usual. Typically, when we did rodent inspections, we looked for droppings. I got droppings here, droppings here, droppings here. Mice are all classic, all over the place. But what I'm finding lately is if I really don't crawl around and lift stuff up, I'm not finding rat droppings. I've been accounts where the owners of the buildings or the managers, even the technicians have said, John, there's rats here every day. And you look at this area, it's like, it's spotless. How could there be rats here every day? But then you start crawling around. You move boxes. You move pallets. You lift up floor panels. And there's sections. It's almost like the rats are saying, this is my area. This is my spot. And this is where I'm going to stay. And classic, we would always look for droppings. And that's where we put our tools. Well, in that case, if I'm finding droppings in these secluded, out-of-the-way areas, sure enough, that's where I'm putting my devices, whether it's a bait station, glue board, snap trap, but that's where the tools are going to go. But I wouldn't know that unless I knelt down, crawled around, and really did that thorough inspection. Key behaviors of our friend. Does anybody have any questions? Anything? Yes? Okay. The question is, if he takes rodent droppings from building A, puts it in building B, will that be pheromone specific and will they won't go to it? They know it's pheromone specific. They'll know if it was a male, if it was a female, pregnant, not. They'll know even know if it was an alpha, but it will still be attractive. Same thing, similar situation in a warehouse where we've got a warehouse where they inspect product every day before it comes in. And they see droppings on it, so they don't want it in the warehouse, but they relocate it to an area of the warehouse for quarantine purposes to get rid of it. You've got that warehouse spotless. In the meantime, if any critters do get in, they're going to go right over there because they've never been in this warehouse before, but all of a sudden, there's a couple of pallets that we know have evidence, they're going to go right there. So if it had that a type of count where we knew we had product quarantined, that's where I would double my efforts as far as tools, monitoring, et cetera. Question? That's right. Now, and I should have prefaced it that if anything I say to you, I'm talking to you as if you have a major infestation. So what you're trying to do is knock this out, put the fire out before Mr. AIB shows up. As far as maintenance programs go, we keep everything pristine. If I'm attacking a problem, sometimes I need it to get a little funky and a little dirty. So if I have that problem, I don't even want Mr. AIB to show up yet either. So he either shows up to see the problem or he shows up to see me trying to control the problem. Everything should be spotless and should be clean. But for rats especially, sometimes I need that scent. I need to attract them. And then I need to end it. A gentleman in the state of Delaware, I have a bait station that I can put a snap trap in. And I demonstrated this snap trap to him. And he said, John, I've been using it every day. But what I've been doing is the snap trap's here, and I've been putting generation blocks behind it. Okay. He says, because I catch the one rat, and the dead carcass attracts all the other rats. I didn't even think of that one. But he's right. Same thing, whether it's droppings and pheromones, but your fresh carcass, I don't want to do this before a cocktail hour, I'm sorry. But that fresh carcass to rats is extremely palatable, and they go after it all the time. So in that degree, when we're trying to put the fire out as quick as possible, sometimes we have to lean to that way. But yes, with audited accounts, everything's got to be as pristine as possible. Just some key behaviors from our friend. Understand, as aggressive as you might think, he's as paranoid as he can be. Okay? That rat will run and stop. He will run and he will stop. And when he stops, he protects his back, he looks out, and when he looks out, everything is working. Everything is at 100%. His hearing, his smell, his eyes. Folks have said that the rat and mouse is blind. They are not blind. These are nocturnal animals. They're designed to see at night. They are colorblind, and they see about 15 to 20 feet. But they make up with the poor sense of sight because everything else is supercharged. The hearing, their smell, their whiskers, all those guard hairs, all that fur is working. If you all closed your eyes, touched your tabletop, touched your shirt, the way we feel with our fingertips, that's what the rodents feel with their vibrissae, with their tactile sensors, all in their fur. How'd that feel? How'd that feel? They feel everything. If that critter is against the wall, one side of his fur is feeling the wall. The other side is actually feeling how the air is moving. When he feels that air current, he's smelling, he's sensing. And they will do that instinctively throughout the areas that they run. Basic stuff. All basic stuff. We might know it. We might read about it. Let the customer sometimes know about it. Customer's thinking about price. But sometimes if I have to go in and really solve a problem, they need to understand what's going on here. You're going to see this change. They'll explore their territory 100 to 300 feet a day. That's been the standard. Just this past year, EPA in the States finally came up with their rodenticide risk mitigation. And it's been an 11-year process. And basically in the States, on that rodenticide, it says that this product cannot be placed beyond 50 feet of a building. And all our rodenticides have that on the label now. Bobby Corrigan has all this new data because he's been doing all this research in New York City. He's basically telling EPA now that the minimum home range is 450 feet, up to 5 miles, that a Norway rat will travel. Makes sense. Certain areas, the rodent doesn't have to travel that much because food and shelter is nearby. But understand the way they behave, they will move, and they will move as far as they want. Rats reproduce year-round, without a doubt. Even if it's cold, they're going to reproduce. Winter, spring, summer, fall. Understand, though, they will adapt to temperature. Temperature attracts a rat and a mouse. If it's freezing outside, and I've got a little more warmth over here, they're going to gravitate to the heat. It can only be a couple of degrees warmer. They're going to gravitate to that. If you're trying to inspect a building, and nowadays every building has wires. Wires go up into ceilings, down into crawl spaces, raise flooring, and then up and around again. Drop ceilings, raise flooring, temperature rises. Rats will gravitate to temperature increases. Rats and mice love wires. When a rodent sees a wire, instinctively, they think that if they chew this, they're going to get nourishment because it resembles a blade of grass or a root from a tree. So that will attract rodents. Typically in buildings, wires, underground, in ceilings, in walls, also higher temperature, rodents will move in. So that's another way to look and to inspect. I know it's cold here. I've got to double check here. You've got a situation where rats, you know, are feeding on material in a freezer, in a walk-in box. Look for the box in the freezer. If you know the walk-in box is sealed up and there's no way they're getting in, they still might be in there. Look for the box that's tucked in the corner that's all filled with rags and towels and pieces of food. And you open that up and you tell me if that's where the rat is. He's living in a freezer, but he created a zone where he's increased the temperature. He's brought in insulation, and his body heat will keep him warm. And he'll stay in there alone and feed on whatever's in there and go back to that corner at night and bed down. However he got in the box to begin with, that's another story. Did he bother to find his way out? No, because he's content. But they will constantly adapt. Basic stuff, 6 to 18 pups per litter, 3 to 7 litters per year. Do the math. If you want to control rodents and there's an infestation, you cannot look at monthly service. That's it. Because you have to get ahead of reproduction. Even the mouse at 5 weeks old will start to reproduce. So if I'm doing once a month service, I'm behind. They're already reproducing by the time I get back again. Maintenance accounts that are clean and pristine, you do what you have to do, we go through those accounts. But if there's an infestation, that's when you got to take a step back and regroup. Female can be impregnated a few hours after she delivers. It's just nonstop. That's your burrow system. Understand if you're going to bait for burrows. Does anybody do a lot of burrow baiting? Do we do that in Canada? Yes, no, maybe, some. Understand how the rodent behaves. When the rodent exits the burrow, when he jumps out, that's just what he does. He jumps. The rat does not come out of the burrow hole like Bugs Bunny and look around. When the rat leaves its burrow hole, that's when he feels he is at the most point he's susceptible to getting hit by an aggressive animal or predator. So when a rat leaves the burrow hole, he flies out. When the rat enters the burrow hole, he doesn't jump in it, he flies into it. And it's usually from about almost 2 to 4 feet away. So you see active burrows. And if you're not going to bait the burrows, which is a pretty cool way to kill rodents, but if you're going to use bait stations, well, don't put the bait station next to the burrow hole because he's never going to find it. You can put the bait station right next to the burrow with the best rodenticide you want. He'll never see it because he leaps out and he doesn't land maybe 2 to 3 to 4 feet away. And when he goes back in, he leaps from another point and he goes right down the hole. Look at the active burrow holes, and if you're not going to introduce the rodenticide down the hole, then look at it. Look for the runway, because you're going to notice the runway does not stop at the burrow hole. The runway stops around here. That's where you're going to start to put the tools, the devices, because that's when they're on the ground, and that's when they're running. These burrow holes will go down about 4 feet. And in that 4 feet, it'll channel, it'll move, and you'll have, if it's extensive, you'll have different colonies, all different party systems going on, and they'll all hang out and do what they have to do. If you see one active burrow hole, just remember there's up to two more, and those are the escape holes, the bolt holes. So if you're going to inspect an active burrow hole and one of them jumps up your butt, you forgot to look for the other one first. There's always an escape hole around, and be aware of it. Roof rats, you may not see them up here, but keep an eye out for them because I'm finding them all over the place. Roof rat loves tropical climate. Go to Florida, roof rats. Go to California, roof rats. But wherever I go, I find them because they come off in trucks, in deliveries. They'll get into malls. And pest control folks up in Michigan will be treating for rats in a mall, but everything's up high. Well, did you ever think it might be a roof rat? And then you research it. Oh, when they renovated the mall, they brought all this new interior plantscaping, and it's all tropical stuff. So they brought roof rats in the dead of winter. They're running through the rafters having a ball. And just understand that a roof rat behaves just like a squirrel, and much more slender, much more agile. That tail will always go past the snout to ID him. Just make sure he's dead when you do that. For me, in my territory, I find roof rats consistently all the way up to Washington, D.C. now, where they're there. I took a group of pest control folks, and you're all welcome to come. We know we have the National Pest Management Meeting every year. This year, 2012, it'll be in Boston, and you're all welcome to come. If you show up, we go to dinner. And I took a table of 12 to dinner in a restaurant. That group had pest control owners from New York, Baltimore, all different areas, and a distributor. We had great time. What do you do when you go to dinner at a trade show? Cocktails, right, Stuart? Wine, and we eat, and we'd be merry. And all I wanted to do was wash my hands. So I went upstairs, and this restaurant was packed, 8 o'clock at night. I went into this little men's room, washed my hands, and I turned to dry. And something scooted around me. Behind the garbage pail was a long tail. That's a roof rat. So I went to kick the can to crush the rat. Now I had a couple of drinks, so I didn't hit the can as forcefully as you might. So then the rat proceeded to jump on me. So then I threw the rat down, picked the can up, and then I killed the rat. While I'm pounding the daylights out of this rat, the manager comes in the restroom. What are you doing in my rat bathroom? I'm killing a rat. Now I go wash my hands. Now he's staring at this rat. What did you do? I said, there's a rat. Wash my hands and I dry again. I said, I'll be very quiet. Because he stood there in shock. I walked down. Now what do? You've got a table of 12 pest control folks who've been through martinis and wine in a packed restaurant. Do you say, hey guys, I just killed a rat upstairs? I want to. I kept my mouth shut. And our marketing manager showed up, and it was his first visit. He wasn't from pest control. He said, you're not eating. What's going on? I said, I just killed a rat upstairs. You did what? Yeah, welcome to pest control. They were all over the place. But I had reservations in that place the next night, which I abruptly canceled. They comped us a lot of stuff. The next day, I did tell all my guests what happened. But I know for a fact, if I would have sat down with those folks, they would have just got up, flipped the tables over. They would have opened up the drop ceilings. They would have had a ball in that place. They probably would have owned the place by the time they got through with the owner. But they're around. They show up. The textbook says they're agile. They are very agile. They jump, they fly, they run. If you suspect you might have an account where, wow, you know, it's had a lot of deliveries, you know, maybe we do have something up high and it could be a roof rat, get a snap trap, get a piece of fresh fruit, go get a can of fresh peaches, plums, anything. They love fruit, and put it on a snap trap. You'll catch them. Even like our products, Generation, all that, it's got fruit oils in it because we're targeting roof rats in certain parts of the country. Okay? Just got a couple of minutes left, right? I believe a little bit. Okay. Just some key mouse behaviors to go over quickly. Understand their home range. Textbook, 10 to 30 feet. But just think about it. They can go 100 feet if they want. They don't choose to. They like to stay close. So if an account tells you the mice are here, that's where we solve the problem. It could be on the 5th floor of a building. It could be on the 20th floor of the building. Solve the mouse problem where they see it. Then go back outside later and sell them on the rest of the stuff. But if I've got mice 40 stories up, I don't need to look around the building because they're up there and it's a short home range and I have to take them out at that point. They're extremely curious, like I said, sexually mature and capable at 5 weeks old, 8 litters per year, 5 to 6 pups per litter. Anybody have any questions? A couple of minutes left. Yes, sir. Right. You're looking at about 2 to 3 weeks early. 3 weeks, perhaps, they're going to start move, but then they move a little further and further, like any animal. Even that, I can't give you a quote. Is it exactly 3 to 4, et cetera? But they will start to move. But usually the juveniles you'll catch early, too. Typically, but also in the pheromones, and this is also for rodenticide stuff, if certain rodents are feeding on one brand rodenticide in that account, that taste or that scent is in the pheromone. So sometimes folks will say, well, I introduced this product, they didn't hit it yet. Well, that's because the infestation is basically tuned in to this one other scent or flavor, if you will. It's not whether they like it or not. It's just that they go to that. But of course, the pups will learn and they'll nurture and then they go off. But like anything with the two, rat or mouse, if the pressure is on the adults, then the pressure will take out the pups to survive. They will be the best parents in the world and they'll nurture them. But textbook says to control, especially Norway rats, you put so much pressure on them, take away food, shelter, water, they will cannibalize themselves. But in the perfect world, that's very hard to happen. Who was here? We spoke about Retropolis. There we go, right? It's all in there. And that's the classic scenario. But at times, we just can't do that. Are you going to Google all those questions? Yes, sir. The best way to bait is burrow baiting. For us, we talk about Mackie loose pellets. Number one, because Mackie pellets are paraffinized. They're the only paraffinized pellet that we have. When we introduce loose pellets into a burrow, the rat sees the pellet as a seed that has fallen from a tree. He instinctively takes the loose pellets deeper into the burrow. Because the pellets are paraffinized, they stay hard. They retain their integrity against the moisture. Now the rodents nibble on it, gnaw on it, and feed on it. When you put a place pack in a burrow, that rat will typically push it out. When we use mini blocks in burrows, they'll either jump over them or they tend to push them out. The label allows you 4 ounces up to 16 ounces per burrow application. You're allowed to put that much of loose pellets, ties bait, into these burrows. We do not have a delivery system, so typically you have a bucket with a shovel, a scoop, you pre-measure it, and you introduce that into your burrows. You're basically taking the food and you're knocking on his door and feeding him at home. City of Chicago, we crushed their rat complaints by 60% by introducing them to a burrow baiting program with loose pelletized bait. There's a line we walk on folks that understand the materials we use, and then there's a line on the other side that they do not. I'm not trying to beat up on anybody, but sometimes they don't take the time to understand the materials we use. The anticoagulants we work with, they're designed for certain purposes, and there are some safety factors in there, and some active ingredients have less risk to non-targets than others. There are some active ingredients we work with in our industry that they will kill a rat and a mouse, and they will really do some harm quickly to non-targets. There are other actives that will not walk down that road, and they will do what they can to a rat and a mouse, but they are more forgiving to non-targets. It's those actives that you would put in that type of situation. Michael, yes? Minimal with the newer anticoagulants. Years ago, we had all that history of secondary and all that regenerative stuff. That really doesn't happen this way. No. There's really nothing left even in the carcass for non-targets. As a manufacturer of rodenticides, I can never say no, and I can never say this is safe. There's always a risk. There's always a chance. With the new molecules, there is less risk, less hazard, but there is always a chance that things can happen. Years ago, the secondary story was all this stuff sat in the carcass, sat in the liver, sat in all that stuff. When you look at the amount of active that's in the product and the amount they ingest, that's where the stuff changes. Okay. Anybody else? Thank you very much, everybody. Enjoy the cocktail hour.
Thank you very much, John. I think you lived up to the introduction of being quite inspirational up here and humorous as well. Now, before we conclude the afternoon program, we have an iPad 2 that's up for grabs, and I'm going to ask David to throw out a number between 1 and 184. I guess that's how many people we have registered, Greg. Is that right? Yep. So throw out a number, and that's the lucky winner, David. Pick a number. No, pick a number. John, pick a number. 122. Martin Obey. Congratulations. We have another one up for grabs tomorrow as well at the end of the day. Just before we end the day, I am missing my cell phone. It's a red BlackBerry. If by any chance any of you see it, if you could drop it off at the front with Greg. It's in a black pouch. And I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank you all for being here today. We'll get started again tomorrow. Registration is at 7:30. It'll be a full day tomorrow as we have a lot of technicians coming in. And I'd like to invite you to come to the exhibit hall, visit the Agrium booth. They're giving out tickets for the cocktail reception that they're sponsoring right now. So thank you very much, everyone, and we'll see you a little bit later.